On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Labor Day edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. Glad to have you along. I don't know who else has been live today, but by God, I am. It's always fun to be live when everybody else is when everybody else is taking a break. We had our fun over the weekend, more or less. Made a nice little dinner on the grill. You know, if you haunt the manager's specials, you can often find some real tasties. And in this case, it was pork loin chops instead of like doing the whole barbecue and stuff. No, just hickory smoked them with a little marinade. Yum yum yum, tasty. Jonathan made a very filling and very inexpensive Labor Day brunch for the family today. That was a lot of fun. Let's see, what did I call it? Jambalaya quesadillas. Yeah, why not? You know? And you know what? It was real good. I guess I could have called it Cajun fried rice too, but with the tortilla, there kind of had to be a quesadilla. But anyway, it is Labor Day, and this is the live Labor Day edition of The Horn. And Labor Day always falls on a Monday, doesn't it? That means something else, too, doesn't it? Yeah, it kind of does. Besides being Labor Day, I guess we just get a kind of a double dose, or a double dip, if you will. That's right! It's Moran Monday on the Horn! Hurry, 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 step right up! You will see behind these thin canvas curtains, or here, because this is, after all, radio. Moran after Moran after Moran. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. The right-wing Morans are out in force over this holiday weekend. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got some Morans. We got individual political Morans. We've got a website Moran. Oh, this one's going to be fun. I only heard about this website Moran in like the last minute or so. We got Morans. Jan Brewer is a Moran, but like you didn't know that. And in a way, I think you could even say that Maximum Generalissimo David Petraeus has his own nominee for this evening. General Petraeus is not at all happy about the Dove World Church and their plan to burn Qurans. So we have two sets of Morans. We have the Dove World Church, and we have the people who get real pissed off when a book gets burned because they think it's holy. See, I get real pissed off when a book gets burned because burning books is like burning brains. It's where we deposit our knowledge as human beings. And I think, you know, that's really a nasty, nasty thing to do, burning books. But if you're getting all it's our holy book, Jeebus! No, not Jeebus, somebody else! Well, there's some Morans. Listen, Moran Monday knows no religious boundaries. Moran Monday knows no ethnic boundaries. Moran Monday knows no political boundaries. But General Petraeus has said No kidding. No kidding. That this Quran burning could put the lives of American troops in danger and damage the war effort. Well, I don't think you can do much more damage to the war effort. It is, after all, Afghanistan. Every time I see a map of that place, it just makes my head hurt. Why are we there? I mean, that's a whole Moran topic. That's years worth of Moranity. Why we're there. And why figuring out that maybe it's not the best thing in the world to be there, why we haven't come home. Why we started it, why we stayed there, why we're not home. It's 11-dimensional Moran. Yeah, the fact of the matter is hundreds of Afghans have been throwing a fit today in Kabul. Yeah. They've been protesting the United States, you know, death to America, death to the great Satan, blah, 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 blah. And they've been calling for President Barack Obama's death. I'm sure they've issued some, you know, semi-literate freak has issued a fatwa on him. All because Dove World Church plans to torch some Qurans. See, here we are. You, me, we're normal. We're ordinary. We're going about our daily business. We're living our lives. But over in this corner, you've got the Dove World Church and their theocratic preacher. And he wants to burn Qurans. And over there in the other corner, you've got a bunch of pissed off Muslims in Afghanistan who don't want their Quran burnt. Tastes great. Meat less filling. Nah. It's not, you know. Stop it. I'm going to get myself in trouble. But yeah, the fact of the matter is, the U.S. Embassy in Kabul issued a statement saying it was, quote, deeply concerned about deliberate attempts to offend members of religious or ethnic groups. Meanwhile, those members of those religion and ethnic groups have issued a statement, these being Afghans, quote, we know this is not just the decision of a church. It is the decision of the president and the entire United States, said Abdul Shakur, an 18-year-old high school student who said he joined the protest after hearing neighborhood gossip about the Quran burning. Yeah, I know. Because he knows. Talk about a guy who can't get a break. Over here, Whitey is pretty sure that Barack Obama was born in Kenya or maybe Mars. And over there, some 18-year-old semi-literate, poverty-stricken, miserable moron is quite sure that Barack Obama will be there to throw the first match. I mean, poor Barack Obama is rapidly approaching Rodney Dangerfield status. No respect. Morans. God, I hate him. Jesus. Yeah, poor David Vitter. Talk about Rodney Dangerfield. Poor Diaper Dave Vitter. He's got a big lead over his opponent in November's race. But even so, Piyush Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, won't endorse him. Maybe he thinks that he just doesn't need it. So, yeah. Morans. Oh, we've got morans. We are. We are up to our armpits in morans. We have a nomination. A Moran nomination, if you will. This one came in from our buddy Corey in Louisville. See, I said it right. Louisville. Louisville. You know, it's almost like you're just kind of grunting. Louisville. He sent this in early, Corey did. It came in 2 days ago, as a matter of fact. Nominee for Moran Monday, Jack Conway, the guy who's about to get teabagged by Rand Paul, is my nominee, says Corey. He's about to get teabagged by Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Corey notes, and I say that with great sadness, but it is the truth. Because how big of a moron must you be when Paul is making mistake after error after gaffe, and you don't make ads out of them and don't keep bringing them up at appearances, and you don't get aggressive in the media? The most accurate poller in the state survey USA released its poll Saturday and showed Conway down 55 to 40. That's 15 points, if my math on the fly is correct, and I do believe it is. Corey says, this is the most toxic candidate to the blue-collar workers in Kentucky, and there are lots of them, and the miners of the eastern and western coal fields. And Paul leads Conway by 8 points in the very blue Louisville area. Hear that again. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is leading Jack Conway in the bluest area in the entire state of Kentucky, namely Louisville. Corey says, next time someone calls us a bunch of stupid hill jacks in Kentucky, I'm not arguing. You can't when you're about to elect a guy worse than Jim Bunning as your senator. That's frustrating. Equally frustrating, in a totally different way, of course, they're playing with my mind. I sat down to watch my beloved Mountaineers play the ferocious Chanticleers, no, really, the Chanticleers, of Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina, the Chanticleers. Go, Chanticleers, go! Division I AA school. It weren't much game. But, you know, Mountaineer. No, this is not the sports part of the program. You can leave your computers tuned to the horn. But I sat down to watch the game, and you know, I've got my little, you know, little nibbles, and, you know, got me an ice-cold can of beer open. It's Football Saturday, by God! It's like going to Mass and not having the wine and the cracker. Chips and beer, you know? And I sit down to watch it, and what do I get every, you know, 10 minutes or so? The liberals and environmentalists are after coal in West Virginia. I'm John Racy, and I'll stand up to that Negro in Washington, I will. If he could have said it, he would have. You just look at his weird little right-wing face, and you know that he's just bubbling up. Just absolutely bubbling up with his little Laura Schlesinger moment. You just have a bourbon. Have a bourbon, Mr. Race. Have another. Oh, take the bottle. Now tell us what you think about Barack Obama. That's sorry, no good, shiftless. You know how it goes. But here's the part that made me want to scream. And this was too good for... This was just too good. Joe Manchin has been toeing the line for the liberal elite in Washington, including Barack Obama, for far too long. Really? Really? I'm a pretty informed little old liberal here in West Virginia, and last I checked, no, Joe's not real crazy about Barack Obama. He certainly didn't bust his ass to get out there on the hustings and campaign for him. Just like he didn't campaign for John Kerry, just like he didn't campaign, just like he didn't campaign, just like he didn't campaign, because the only person Joe Manchin campaigns for is Joe Manchin. That's a Manchin family tenet. The only people Manchin's campaign for is other Manchins. But no, I was bombarded. trying to enjoy a football game. I'm going to have to go somewhere and watch it on satellite. So maybe I don't get that. I don't have the money to bring satellite in here. But just so maybe I don't have to get those filthy friend of Cole ads, and because the election's November 2nd, and that means practically every blessed game is going to be buried in this Cole filth. Blech! And it's a double blech when you see that they're trying to paint Joe Manchin as a liberal. I'm a liberal. I know other liberals. Joe Manchin is no liberal. But it's the same story all over the country. Because that's all the right wing's got, and that's all, and they realize that that's all they need. All they've got to do is tap into Whitey's hatred, and they think that they'll be fine. And what's kind of terrifying is the fact that they may be correct. You know, when you see the video of that was shot at the White Stock, and you see that one and you see that one video of the pasty faced white guy says, you know, now I understand how the Indians felt when the white people came over here. He's talking about the Muslims. At which point I was reaching for the gin bottle. I really know how they feel now that I see these Muslims coming over here. And then the next clip of him or his wife or whomever saying, I really hate Barack Obama because he's divided us so much. We were together on 9/11. We was all standing together. And Barack Obama's divided us. Imagine that. He's divided an entire nation solely by being sort of an off-coffee shade of skin tone. Breathtaking, isn't it? Yeah, it is. But Barack Obama can give, he does give a good speech. You got to give him that. He gave one of those world beaters up in Milwaukee today. I don't know, maybe we'll listen to it in a little bit. It's entirely possible. But there's all kinds of stuff on the plate this evening. And it's all over the place. Let's see. Obama revs into campaign mode in Wisconsin. That was the CBS headline. And there's some polling data out there that indicates that no matter how disgusted we may be with politics as it exists, the American people still kind of know where it's coming from. And here's the hint. They recognize that it's not entirely Barack Obama's fault. So there's that. There has been a sighting out on the horizon. You remember who J.C. Watts was? The only black Republican in the House of Representatives? His replacement has been sighted out on the horizon. He comes from South Carolina, and he will likely be elected to Congress in November. This guy's a real Lulu. Tim Scott. And a prophecy update, if you will, if you'll pardon me getting out the, you know, the tattered and frayed purple velvet robes with the sort of halfway falling off applique, shiny moon and stars on them. A follow-up to James J. Lee, the Discovery Channel hostage taker. And this is a surefire media Moran Monday nominee. Maybe we should just grandfather out the Fox Network too. But why? Well, okay, we're going to do this. So the Fox. Do you remember the other night? You remember the other night when I read you Charlotte Mizowitz's miserable little PR pitch, for which I criticized her, and she wrote back that she was just a poor widow woman trying to make money by doing what her boss said. Remember that? And I said, and at the time I said, because it's true, I don't have to speculate. I don't have to guess. I said that Ms. Mizowitz's little blast would make it around the information, the informosphere. Or perhaps the sleazosphere. And that while I was refusing to make use of her allegation that James J. Lee was obviously influenced by Al Gore, that somebody would take them up on it. Now remember this, because this is important. You and I, we went through the entirety of James J. Lee's manifesto, didn't we? I'm pretty sure we did. We did. I'm certain of it. I remember reading it. And you'll recall that there was nothing in there about Al Gore. There was nothing in there about an inconvenient truth or former vice presidents or Nobel laureates or nothing. We read the whole thing. Nothing in there about Al Gore. But the other side's megaphone is so well funded and thoroughly staffed with widow women raising two children by doing what their boss says, that the thing can go around the world, and the next thing you know, an attack blonde on Fox or some goofy idiot like Steve Doocy is blathering on, repeating her word for word. It's got to be gratifying to be Charlotte Mizowitz. She types up some filth on her computer and hits send to her recipients. And the next thing you know, goofy Steve Doocy or some attack blonde on Fox is repeating her words, and she's like Albert Brooks in Broadcast News looking at William Hurt on the television going, "That's funny, I say it here, it comes out there." You'll see what I mean in a minute. I wish I was kidding.
A bizarre hours-long hostage situation on the Discovery Channel and that building. Now we know the gunman's extreme environmentalist views may have been sparked by an Al Gore documentary. Where's the media outrage there? Would they be silent if the tables were turned? With a different...
Well, they have thus far. I never did get around. Yeah, I did. I read you Jim David Guy, Adkisson's manifesto about his killings in Tennessee that were, James J. Lee didn't kill anybody, but Jim Adkisson did, and he had a house full of right-wing Blatherfest books, but nobody really said anything about it. There were certainly no indictments handed down, but on Fox, they were ready to pounce, thanks largely, I suspect, to the work of Charlotte Mizowitz, a widow raising two children, by pumping out right-wing filth day in and day out.
Documentary with a different point of view. Eric? The big story yesterday afternoon was the hostage crisis. Just when you have a format, something like this happens in breaking news. And we heard Shepard Smith trying to figure out what was happening on satellite radio yesterday was absolutely a challenge. We understand, and now we know for sure, that that man decided that he had one thing that he could do to save the planet and get his point across, and that's take over the Discovery Channel building in Maryland.
Are you talking about James Lee, a 43-year-old man who apparently was from San Diego, California?
Go attack, blonde, go!
He had had a sordid past with the Discovery Channel. He apparently had set up a big protest there back in 2008. He was actually in jail for a short period of time.
See, they went out on a date, and James J. Lee sat back at home, and the Discovery Channel never called, never wrote. He was a stalker. He was stalking the Discovery Channel.
For violating, I believe, efforts to keep him away from this property. So the people at Discovery knew who he was. But here's the thing. He apparently became some sort of an environmentalist junkie after he watched...
Oh, that's nice. An environmentalist junkie. Now, this is important because she's just called him an environmentalist junkie. Okay, environmentalist, I get. I understand that word. That is a word that was invented by right-wingers at least two-thirds of a generation ago to describe people who cared about the planet and about the people living on the planet and the environment in which they live. Environmentalist was not, to the best of my knowledge, a phrase that was invented by the so-called environmentalist community. It's another one of those names that they hung on us and stuck. But he's not just an environmentalist. He's an environmentalist junkie. Are we to understand Fox Attack Blonde that he that had a gun in one hand and in the other arm was a heroin-filled syringe running into his arm? Is that what you mean, Fox Attack Blonde? He was an environmentalist junkie.
Vice President, former Vice President's movie, Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore's movie. He became a radical environmentalist. But that is not necessarily how all of the news media are talking about this gentleman today.
You look at some of the things he was demanding of the Discovery Channel. One of them, TLC must stop encouraging the birth of any more parasitic human infants. The guy was nuts.
So no more birth.
The question was, did he become nuts watching Al Gore's movie? And the other question is, it's amazing that he didn't shoot himself during the movie instead.
Yeah, because he was so nuts he didn't know the business end of a gun like a good Second Amendment worshiping right winger would. Oh, damn, that's funny. That's amazing he did. Because he's a stupid environmentalist, he's probably going to beat people to death with the butt of that pistol.
But if somebody said, hey, I'm worshiping some conservative icon, or let's say that they were a fan of a major Republican player, would that be played up?
Or Glenn Beck. Or Michael Savage. Or Rush Limbaugh. Or Bill O'Reilly. Or Sean Hannity. Because, you see, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage, and Bill O'Reilly all appeared on the bookshelf of, who? Yeah, Mr. Adkisson in Tennessee, who, unlike Mr. Lee, who didn't kill anybody, actually killed two people before he was wrestled to the ground by them sissy, panty-waisted liberals. Right? You see how these false equivalencies work? And it's important for me to note that, again, we read the manifesto, and there was, the only book referenced in there was a book about a telepathic gorilla. That's it. Nothing more. But Charlotte Misiewicz, and apparently others, but Charlotte Misiewicz is the only one I saw sending out such a filthy email, immediately connected James J. Lee to Al Gore. Now, I have run a minute and 48 seconds of this audio for you, and you have never heard them cite exactly where they get the idea that he was connected to Al Gore. Here's the fun part. We can watch the other 3 minutes of this, and you won't hear that either. You won't hear it there either. You know why? Not to put too fine a point on it, but you won't hear it there because it isn't there. This is the Fox style book in all its in all its putrid glory. And I would be horribly remiss if I didn't note that once again this post at Crooks and Liars comes to us from my good friend Dave Nyort, who is the go-to guy on eliminationism. And on the ways that the media the way that Fox News capitalizes on misery. Because you see, Emery and Eileen are sitting at home in their matching Barca loungers, and they're watching Steve Dubley and generic Attack Blonde, whomever she may be. Maybe it's Gretchen Carlson. I don't know. But there's so many, I can't keep up with the Attack Blondes. And they're looking at, boy, you see there, Marlene? Them tree huggers is found where the guns is sold, and now ain't none of us safe. And they're trying to take down our beloved Discovery Channel, where we learned about the aliens what built them pyramids down in Mexico and is going to destroy the world in 2012. I'm so glad we've got our stockpile of survivor seeds and we bought our food insurance. Oh, Marlene, I just love you that much that I was willing to do it. Because them environmentalists, they's going to be the ruin of any decent place any of us has left to live. Them environmentalists.
all across the span of the media, from the blogs to the newspapers on down. Instead, you see, if you read this story, even though this was he claims it was this nut job, claims it's his foundation for going off the reservation, Al Gore's movie, there seems to be an effort to push that.
See the allegation? Now, it's entirely possible I missed something. Somebody will send it to me if I did. Bob, you know, you missed the big media interview that he gave after he was taken down and arrested and put in the straitjacket, where he said, "I'd like to thank Al Gore. You love me. You really love me." You missed that part, Bob. But see, I read the manifesto. Just like we read Atkinson's manifesto. Because that's how you make the judgment. And there's nothing. I mean, if anything, all the immigration stuff in there, that's straight out of Hannity. That's straight out of Beck. That's straight out of Savage. I think the word vermin appears in the manifesto of James J. Lee. And unless I'm mistaken, probably the most frequent user of the word vermin on over-the-air terrestrial radio is, in fact, Michael the Savage Wiener. Just say it.
Linkage down and away. Now it's time for our weekly visit with Michelle Malkin. She's a syndicated columnist, Fox News contributor, and always...
Oh, goody, the anchor baby!
...need to get from you. First off, Michelle, whatever we had as your topic number one, move to number two. When we saw what took place...
Yeah, Michelle, move to number two. Because everything that comes out of your mouth now is going to be number two. These guys not even pay attention to the words coming out of their mouth. Do they mean to make it this easy for me? I think I don't know.
Yesterday afternoon, live on Fox News, where this lunatic took over the Discovery Channel building over in Maryland and claimed that is his main motivation, Al Gore and his movie, Inconvenient Truth.
How many times have they said that now? That's at least three, maybe four times. Claimed as his main motivation, Al Gore. Jeebus. So, somebody, you know, but wait, this would not, I mean, this is a Moran Monday nomination, so we've got to kind of do it, because it wouldn't be right to leave the anchor baby, Michelle Malkin, without her being able to open her mouth and pour out some number two.
Where's this guy coming from? And how do you think this has been played out right now as we read about this story and hear about this story today?
Yeah, well, clearly this guy had more than a few screws loose. He had been on the radar screen of Discovery and local police and law enforcement there for quite a while, had many grievances built up, and clearly embraced a radical and environmental agenda and ideology. But I'm going to do something that...
Then where does the immigration stuff come in? Because that's not, and as Dave Nywert notes in his post at Crooks and Liars, that's not part of any environmental point of which I'm aware. There might be a couple of loopies out there talking about that stuff, but not, no. For the most part, I mean, I've been involved in the environmental movement for a while now, and I've never heard any of that stuff talked. Not to say that I know everything that's being said, but really... I hear most of the mainstream stuff. But wait, he was a radical environmentalist. Maybe you only get to come in and listen to the filthy anchor baby lesson. Anchor baby? Yeah, he used that in his manifesto. Maybe you only get to come in and hear about the anchor babies after you've, you know, gotten, I don't know, your radical environmentalist merit badge.
Enemies and opponents on the other side rarely do, and that is to make clear that
her enemies and opponents, she's going to say something that her enemies and opponents on the other side rarely do. Enemies? Really? See, they can't resist going to they can't resist using the rhetoric of violence. Her enemies? Really? We're not all Americans anymore? And she has enemies who are Americans? Opponents? Yes. But you'll note, and this is one of those psychology moments to which, and I will gladly defer to horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, she uses the word enemies before she uses the word opponents. In fact, using the word opponent is an afterthought. But anyway, what's she going to say?
Gore is not responsible for this. An inconvenient truth certainly is an incitement to stupidity and an incitement to massive, costly government intervention, but it is not, and it was never intended to be, an incitement to violence. Now, unfortunately, you cannot find...
Unfortunately, you cannot say that about Michael Savage, about Sean Hannity, about Rush Limbaugh, about the Bill O'Reilly, about Glenn Beck, or all the other second-tier yammerheads. You can't say that about them. They incite violence every day. She is making a valid point. There's a big difference between inciting violence and not inciting violence. It's kind of like the difference between, I don't know, a parrot and a newspaper. There's really no resemblance between the two. Al Gore does a movie in which he says our planet is very much imperiled and we face a real crisis and there's some bad shit coming if we don't do something about it. And Michael Savage writes a book called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder in which he argues that filthy, verminous immigrants are coming and bringing diseases and we've got to do something about it. And you know, Hannity and Limbaugh and O'Reilly and Beck talk about, you know, the dirty progressives, and Beck incites a guy to put on a bulletproof vest and go out and go after the Tides Foundation. I agree with anchor baby Michelle Malkin. There is a big difference.
Same sense of fairness from the other side. I mean, just last week, Brian, we were talking about how all of these leftist bloggers had indicted unfairly and falsely the right and the Tea Party for the slashing of the Muslim cabbie there. And you see this every time there is an act of violence that involves some sort of nutball, they're at the ready to indict the right. And
only because there's evidence indicating that the right was involved. You see, there's a difference. Now, granted, it's not a difference that Emery and Eileen, or Marlene, he may have more than one wife, I'm not sure, I'll have to check. It's not a difference that Emery and Eileen could sort of dope out on their own, sitting there in their matching Barca loungers. But it is a difference, a very real difference. Very real indeed.
To shut up conservative bloggers and Fox News and every Republican leader. And I'm so sick of that kind of blame game. And it also obscures in...
Once again, it's a game to Michelle Malkin. It's a game. It's a game. Two innocents lie dead, buried... in East Tennessee. The other congregants from that day have had their worlds changed forever by a madman influenced by, directly, by right-wing blatherheads, right-wing riot inciters, incitementists. Is that a new word? On the other hand, they have to make up a connection to Al Gore because Charlotte Misiewicz said so? Huh?
In this particular case, that there are people who incite people to eco-terrorism. It is a grave problem. The FBI has talked about it for a long time.
Have they talked about it as long as they've talked about right-wing terrorism, Michelle? Because I recall, I think you were part of the hissy that was had early in the year when the former W. Bush administration's Justice Department report about right-wing terrorism came out, and you were shocked, shocked. You felt like you were being singled out. Because you're a hate monger, but, you know, who the hell am I, right? But it goes on like that, ad infinitum. Big thanks to our buddy Dave Nyward for getting that out there. She is a piece of work, that Michelle Malkin. So it is Moran Monday on the Horn, but it's also Labor Day. And it's also a very special day for the Horn itself. Because following this program, immediately, you know, don't touch your dials. I don't know, you may have to refresh, who knows. But immediately following this program, you will hear the initial weeknight broadcast live of the Rick Smith Show. Now, it may only be an hour or so. The first week or so, they're sort of working out kinks. I remember when we did this, too. And there may be some bugs involved. It may not be entirely perfect, but, you know, what is? The Rick Smith Show will be coming your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Don't touch that dial. Because, as Rick noted, what he's developing is an opportunity for you to scare the living bejesus. Not with threats of violence, but with talk of hope. Talk of real solutions for the problems that this country faces. And the people that you will be talking to eventually when he goes hot on terrestrial radio, those folks have never heard you before. So we need a really, really strong horn commitment to the Rick Smith Show and to helping Rick get off to a good start. I don't know if he'll even be taking calls tonight, but check it out, and check it out each succeeding night. I think you will be glad you will. I've also set it up. I made contact with Ben Birch over the weekend to make sure that the Rick Smith Show will be set up for podcasting and archiving. So all those nights that I've sort of run over by a few minutes, those days are gone. This has to be over by about 8 p.m. and 59 minutes and about 50 seconds at the very least. So that takes a little bit of time out of our conversation, but not a whole heck of a lot. So that's a wonderful thing. And by the way, since we are early in the month of September, it's only the 6th so far, I got to thinking, and if this works out, it would be beautiful. Here's what we need. And this is reasonably, relatively easy. And I say that as a person who doesn't have two nickels to rub together. We are looking for, and God, I wish I had something to send you. I wish I did. We'll try to figure out some way to do that. Something, just some token of our appreciation. But right now it's impossible. Simply because we, you know, it's such a cash-strapped nightmare to survive. But what we're looking for, and I think this is doable, and I've never mentioned any, I've mentioned it sort of generically before, but never actually put it out there. So, you know, there's a subscription box at the Horn, and I am so grateful to everybody who has, in fact, subscribed so that they will, so that we know that there's some money coming in every month that we can kind of account for. But at any rate, what I think it would be kind of cool to see if we can round up, if you guys can do it, because we've got a big audience, and for the most part, a very small contingent. Very small contingent does most of the carrying of the weight. We've got an audience that measures in thousands, and mostly for the 40, 50, maybe 60 on a good month, folks do all the contributing to keep it going. Everybody else just rides. Well, let's see if we can do something kind of novel. I don't want to create. It's just a suggestion. You'll be the ones who create it. I want to create the Thrifty 250. The Thrifty 250 is 250 members of the Horn family who have $10 every month that they can commit to the Horn. Because if we get 250 subscribers at $10 a piece, that will mean that we make our monthly goal every month. And it will enable me to shut up. The Thrifty 250. 250 people, $10 a month. You know, I broke that down. That's $2.50 a week. That's about 50 cents a show. 50 cents? Let's see, let me break that down. Let me turn that into an hourly rate for me as if I were getting paid. It's about 16 cents an hour for me. By the time you factor in John Fox and Ben Birch, that takes it down to about 5 cents an hour. So here's the question. Is the labor of John Fox, me, Ben Birch, everybody who works to make all of this go, is it worth a nickel an hour? I ask you this because it's Labor Day. Is the horn worth a nickel an hour? Less than a nickel an hour. Not $5 an hour. Not $50 an hour. Is the horn worth a nickel an hour? A nickel an hour. 5 cents for every 60 minutes? Jesus, what is there out there that you can even buy for a nickel an hour? Well, if you become one of the thrifty 250, that's what you will have done. For less than a nickel an hour, you will have made sure that the horn continues to exist for everyone, not just for yourself. Remember, we're on this side of the debate where we believe in providing for each other and taking care of one another. There are people out there who listen to this who cannot afford to contribute. And a lot of you, especially contribute, and you carry those folks part of the equation. And on their behalf, I thank you. And on my own as well. And all of us at the horn, we thank you. So there it is. And you know what? If we get that nifty 350, this is the one thing I can do. You tell me how you want to be listed, and I'll see if I can't talk John Fox into creating a little box on the horn main page. And we will, by God, list however you wish to be listed, and this includes all contributors, not just this new idea. You send me an email to bobkincaid@gmail.com and tell me how you want to be listed, and the nifty 250, and we're including present contributors in this as well, the nifty 250 will be there for everybody to see who comes to the website so that they can know who it is that keeps this all going, and how it is that this all goes, and know for a fact that this is media that is not controlled by the Citizens United corporate power money structure, and that it is in fact media that is made by people for people, and that it shall not perish from the internet. What do you think? I think that's kind of a cool idea. Let me know. The nifty 250. I'm kind of fond of it. So we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. This is a special Labor Day edition of The Horn. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob, and we'll be back.
You see me now, a veteran of a thousand psychic wars.
Yeah, see, if you pay attention to right-wing media, like Fox and Hate Radio and so forth, you begin to feel like that after a while. That, of course, a classic track from the Blue Oyster Cult. From Blue Oyster Cult. Veterans of the Psychic Wars. Yeah. Don't let these shakes go on. I know the feeling. It's what, oh my God, you should have, see, I wasn't fit to come on the air the first time I got around to seeing Michelle Malkin. And I don't know who said it in the chat room, but I love the idea. Take Michelle Malkin, put her in a hijab, and march her into a teabag rally, and see how long she lasts. Even while she's screaming, but I'm one of you! Jesus, there wouldn't be anything left but little tiny bits of Anchor Baby. You know I'm right. You know it's true. What would you pay? Michelle Malkin, hijab, teabagger rally. Whew, that'd be good. That would be good. I mean, we saw what happened when a guy just wandered into the 9/11 Ground Zero rally with the beanie on his head. I'm sure the beanie has a real name. I'm sorry, I don't know it. They went right after him. Holy cow, you know? So let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so did you have a good holiday?
Yeah, it was quiet, you know.
Yeah.
It was pleasant. Did up some manager's special pork chops and, you know, had a good time. Oh, yeah, here and there.
Yeah. Hey, listen, so...
Unfortunately, I could not beer away the clean coal and Joe Manchin is a liberal ads on Mountaineer game. It's going to be a tough season, Sandra.
Oh, no, that's... Wow, okay, yeah, I suppose that is a bit galling. Wow. That's too much. Well, listen, so I'm kind of confused. So now Obama is trying to call for some $50 billion stimulus thing, and he's fighting for us every day, every hour, every minute.
Yeah, I caught the speech.
But the thing that kills me is that I guess he's trying to find his inner Roosevelt, but it's weak because he says interest groups he has battled talk about me like a dog. That's as much as he can muster. I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny because I'm like, well, those same groups are the ones that are giving you money hand over fist, right? I don't know. It just was like, yeah.
Well, sure. You know, I read the story. I read the news story about it, and it was kind of funny because, the $50 billion thing, let's see, we're going to rebuild 150,000 miles of road, 4,000 miles of rail, and 150 miles of America's runways. So you read that and you hear that and you go, well, you know what, I can get down with that. That's a good idea. We probably need to rebuild 300,000 miles of roads. We probably need to repave 300 miles of runway. But you know what? It's a start. And I think, you know, wait, how can you hate that?
Oh no, but don't.
But they can.
Yeah, but the hundred million that they want to do in corporate tax cuts. I'm like, they don't pay any taxes as is. So what are you gonna just give them money?
At that point, yeah, I was gonna say at that point it turns into this thing, Sandra, where you're given the money. I love this. This is from the CBS News report. They said, for their part, Republicans were quick to denounce the president's $50 billion proposed infrastructure project. And my God, you'd like to think that these bastards are out of touch, but they've got, you know, a whole bunch of this country convinced that holy cow, listen to this quote from Eric Cantor.
Ugh.
We need to cut spending immediately and end the environment of uncertainty that continues to impede real private sector job creation and growth.
Who's going to pave the runways? The private sector? I ain't landing on no private sector runway.
Well, no, but the thing is that are we supposed to just forget that their sort of tax cuts for the rich, where's the jobs? You know, where's this wonderful economy that's supposed to flow from that policy? I'm still waiting.
Well, you would think with something like this, Sandra, wouldn't you, that I mean, somebody's got to do that resurfacing of the runway. Somebody's got to lay those rails. Somebody's got to fix those roads. Would that add to job creation? I don't know.
No, but it's just sort of, I mean, it's so clear what they're trying to do, but what's disturbing is, okay, so they take one of the houses, and then what? You know, I mean, they're not going to do anything to change the situation. And I'm not even too sure if even they can make it any worse, because, let's be honest, the sort of timid response from the get with Obama hasn't helped his cause. You know what I mean?
You're absolutely right. And unless I clicked away from this, I saw something along those very lines over the weekend, and it had me fit to scream. It was someone pointing out that this is not the time to be what you just said, and apparently I did kill the link, but it's a darn shame because it's mind blowing.
Well, no, but it's just sort of, I mean, I understand it's election time, and so he needs to come out with what I'm calling gibberish, because he's saying that the Republicans seem to be running on the slogan of no, we can't. And it's like, hello? Did you just come down the shower? What the hell?
And I was about to say something snarky early in the program, Sandra. Well, you know, Barack Obama, he sure did give him a real fine speech today.
One thing is funny. He said, if I said fish live in the sea, they say no. And I thought that was, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm so simple. I thought that was pretty
well, good. It's good because it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I are kind of in the same place where, no, nobody made him run for president. But by the same token, yeah, I don't even think Bill Clinton had this kind of opposition.
Oh, no. I'm never going to not claim of what the opposition is and how hysterical and vicious it all is. That's a given.
You know, the other thing I loved out of that line? If I claimed fish live in the sea, they'd say no. I know this is going to seem like a stretch, and maybe it is. But you, he, and me are all about the same age, right? And I sense that we all have a similarity of cultural understanding to a certain extent. There is a passage from Monty Python, and it appears on the soundtrack, which you had to be a real hardcore. The soundtrack to Monty Python and the Holy Grail has other stuff interspersed in it. And you remember the scene in Monty Python and the Holy Grail where Sir Bedivere is explaining how sheep's livers can be used to predict earthquakes? Well,
that movie.
There's an interlude where they break away because it's been, you know, if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of lead and therefore she's a witch, or made of wood and therefore she's a witch. And there's a breakaway where a professor of logic steps in and says, the last scene was interesting from the point of view of a professional logician in that it contained blah, 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 blah. He said, logical fallacies of the type so often committed by my wife. And this is where Obama's comment comes in, because I was sat there watching. I went, what? Because the professional logician then says, for given the proposition that all mackerel are fish and all fish live in the sea, my wife will conclude not that all mackerel live in the sea, but if she buys kippers, it will not rain, or that trout live in trees, or even that I do not love her anymore. And so I heard that if I say fish live in the ocean, and I immediately went to my little nerdy Python brain, and I went, oh, my God, he knows that bit.
I don't know. I guess this is their playbook. I have no idea. It's just really, it's just a hard sell when you look at.
I didn't start out this administration as a cynic. I have been made cynical, Sandra, and I think to a certain extent the same applies to you. And the fact of the matter is, when I heard the speech today. And I'll probably get some hate mail from some liberal somewhere who disagrees, and that's fine. But and it's a little difficult to enunciate, but when I see Barack Obama go out on Labor Day and give a big Labor Day speech, and I heard it today, I immediately sort of I said to myself, you know, somewhere out in Wingnut Land, there is a right-winger whipping a bunch of pro-lifers into an electoral frenzy, promising that this time we'll save the babies. And I have in my head this idea, Sandra, that, you know, look, this is Barack Obama going to Milwaukee. It's a very, you know, pro-labor, Labor Day speech, right? And it comes on the heels of the revelations in the new book that's out from the Karzar that you mentioned, that, you know, his chief of staff is running around saying, F the UAW.
Well, not only that, but don't forget, you know, thanks to, Alan Simpson, you know, their whole little secret toxic cat food commission is out front and center. And, you know, I keep that in mind because, you know, they're saying one thing, and at the same time, they're planning, you know, to turn a lame duck session into some sort of nightmare, from what I can tell, with this secret, you know, corporatist-dominated commission.
It's, you know, and remember, it's not just Alan Simpson, it's Pete Peterson, too.
Well, no, that's even worse. I mean, I was, the Alan Simpson is the front person with a big mouth. The people who are operating with him, you don't hear or see, you know, are the corporations and the billionaires who are sort of backing it. And don't forget that Pelosi passed some sort of procedure, I can't remember the name of it, that will allow them to, you know, do an up or down or get the measures, you know, into Congress quite quickly.
And at this point in time, doesn't that make you a little nervous?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It makes me real nervous because, you know, when the Congress want to do something pernicious, they don't seem to have any problems, you know, getting that done quickly, like the Patriot Act and all these other sort of horror shows that we've been subjected to. But anything else, like extensions of, you know, unemployment insurance, becomes some sort of huge ordeal. But
I mean, Obama did speak fairly clearly today about the Social Security issue, didn't he? I'll fight every effort to take the retirement savings of Americans and hand it over to Wall Street.
Well, yeah, but so what, Bob? Not when he has, has congressional backing to possibly do something to those entitlements. I don't trust it. That's basically what I'm trying to say. I don't trust him or any other Democrat at this point when I know what they got going on, which I don't think a lot of people know. You see what I mean?
Well, I think you're right. I think on any given issue that you tend to that you would be tempted to say that about, that's true.
Well,
a lot of the American people don't know what's going on.
Well, and the problem is, of course, most people, if they knew that they're attempting to sort of alter, let's just say that, the Social Security program, they would be like, hell no. But how are they operating? They're operating behind the scenes. They're presenting it at a time after an election. I mean, all of it is so horrific.
Well, I think it was Digby over the weekend who said it's absolutely ridiculous that people are out there screaming in the streets and frothing about a problem 30 years down the road when we've got as many millions unemployed as we have right now.
Well, no, but that is the main thing. And, you know, I keep going back because just, you know, I have a sense of history, or I like to look back at what's what or what I remember. And I remember the people freaking out at 7% in the Reagan administration. So we know that this is unprecedented, this sort of, oh, we don't know what to do about this persistent high unemployment bullshit, you know?
That's the absolute truth.
That's the thing that really bugs me. It's like, no, don't give me this, I'm working night and day for you bullshit. It's like, no, you're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you will be when we've got an industrial policy.
Well,
you will be when we've got a manufacturing policy. and you will be when people are actually going back to work.
Well, or, you know, you're explaining clearly on your bully pulpit why shit is like it is. But since I don't think he understands, I'm not waiting for that explanation anytime soon. And another thing I thought was really funny today was from on high, General Petraeus saying that burning of this Quran is going to mess up his war effort. It's like, who's running shit in this country, actually?
I read that. On the one hand, I thought, you know, this probably does make his judge, you know, that freak. Because this is the, you know, this is the digital age and shit goes around the world, you know, the lie gets around the world before the truth has a chance to get its shoes on. It's one little low rent, the piss ant in some city in Florida who's going to burn him some Korans, even though the fire department has said they will arrest his ass if he does. I don't know if you caught that part, but they won't issue him a burn permit. But it's made it to Afghanistan, and you've got equally ignorant fundamentalists over there who are having a fit about it, and David Petraeus going, you know, I didn't need this.
Well, no. And, I mean, I understand. I'm not saying that he's not valid, but, I mean, isn't there something just a bit disturbing about the dictate from the military right here where we are? I don't know. All of it is just really a bit too close for comfort with the sort of military. It's, you know, it's all so Roman and so weird. I don't know.
No, you just said the magic word. It is Roman.
And it's like, that dude, you know, don't forget the Roger that happy face. He always keep that in mind when you think about Mr. Petraeus.
Yeah, well.
That email, I'm like, dude, you know, it's too weird. But, yeah, so it's just. You know, I think that Quran burning thing, yeah, that's crazy. That is crazy. And so what the latest is that he can't get a permit or what?
No, he can't. unless he's gone to court or something later. No, the guy at Dove World Church can't get a burn permit, but he says he's going to do it anyway because Jeebus wants him to.
Well, okay, is this a case of just the crazies get going beyond what the billionaires' backers want, or is this just great part of the show as they sit back with the popcorn?
No, I think. Look, remember, Afghanistan is great business. It's a terrible war, but it's a great business. And so I think corporate America would just assume this clown at Dove World Church shut the F up.
Okay, so it is sort of stepping on some extra toes.
Yeah. He's happy because I get the sense from reading about this clown, Sandra, that he is not that far from being a Fred Phelps wannabe. You know, with a much bigger jumbotron in the sanctuary and a congregation made up of more than merely his extended family like Phelps has.
Oh, that setup is so yucky. Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
But you know, the other thing, though, is that he's really thrilled. This guy, I'll bet you, is thrilled to death that they're going the bananas in the streets of Kabul over this. Because he, doing his violence, will look over and say, I told you they was violent.
Well, maybe the people in Kabul will just hurry up and go ahead and knock that bank over and get all that money out.
You and I have investments in Dubai. I had no idea, Sandra.
Oh, dear God. I'm like, oh, snap with that bank. And who is the brother of Karzai anyway? I mean.
Well, he's a heroin dealer, isn't he?
Well, yeah, and he's everywhere. He's all up in this whole bank where they had the nerve to tell the Treasury Department, hey, you're going to have to, you know, bail this bank out. I was rolling. It's not funny, but it's just like some sort of the theater of the absurd now. It really is.
I've read several accounts of the Afghan bank story. You know, Jesus, I knew we were bailing out banks, but wow.
Come on. I mean, it's just sort of, it's, I don't know. I just thought, really? You know. Anyway. Hey, the other story. I don't know if you saw this, but it was killing me. Did you know that in Argentina, folks care picked off left and right?
No.
Well, there's this huge problem where I guess they, for every 100 peso you earn, the government taxes like 65% if it's straight across the board. So, you know, if they're taxing that much, what are people doing with their money?
Squirreling it.
Putting it everywhere else but. So, when they want to buy a house, these freaks are going into the banks to get the safe deposit and pulling out, you know, $25,000 here, $150,000 there, and they got people on motorcycles rolling up, shooting people in the face, taking their shit. They've had like 4,700 this year of those sort of things.
Dear God.
Yeah, it's just really out of control. I didn't know if you had
no.
Had heard about it, but I just thought it was interesting. The reason why it's in the news is this big story of this pregnant woman who was just trying to take $13,000 for a down payment, and she was shot, and she was pregnant, like 8 months pregnant, and her baby died. And so it's all everyone's all outraged, and now they want protection, you know, from the government.
But those, you know, but those are you said a 65% across the board?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like no, you have to pay 65 cents out of that 65 pesos out of that 100 pesos in some form of taxes across the board, state, city, whatever, federal. If you were to declare it, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's obviously the taxation is over the top there. So, as usual, people are not, they're doing everything in cash, you know. They're not exposing themselves to the state. But what's happening is that all the other poor people there, you know, and criminals and whatever, syndicates, they know that that's going on too. So they look out and they scout out and they just rob people. And the people can't report it because then they would have to be explaining, well, why do you have that much cash? You're not being, you know, paying taxes, so...
And see, you know where my mind immediately goes. It sounds like a right-wing wonderland to me because, first and foremost, how many of these hoarders out there, you know, with their survival seeds and their food insurance and their the 700 days worth of water in the basement have something squirreled away in the mattress. And of course, when you get down to a cash-based economy like that, you can't hang that temptation in the front of a criminal for very long without him, you know, reaching for it.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, they obviously have this sort of crazy underground economy going on, and apparently you're not obliged to file a tax return unless you make more than $36,000 a year. Which apparently is only 20% of the population.
Wow.
So if that's the case, yeah, the state gonna go after that.
Sure they are. Because their uber wealthy class probably has their money elsewhere.
Well, yeah, but I also saw this as, and they also have 25% inflation at the moment too.
Jesus.
And so, but the thing is, I was just looking at this and saying, well, you know, that situation could be here, you know, if they keep distributing the wealth the way they are in this country.
Well, precisely, because sooner or later, if the Bush tax cuts and the cowardly Democratic Congress, if the Bush tax cuts are extended, if they actually take action on it, and this goes back to those. The wham bam thank you ma'am rules that you were talking about with Leader Pelosi. If those things are extended, then that's what was the number? $1.5 million donation to every the wealthiest every member of the wealthiest 2% of this country.
Oh no, yeah, it's a direct transfer.
Which means that the government in turn has to get the money on which government runs, and I don't care how many teabaggers howl and scream about it. You cannot have government without taxation. You can't have government without money. And so the government will eventually look to, you know, look what happened in Florida. The Bush tax cuts kick in, and all of a sudden, the filing fees go up.
And not only that, but in speaking of Florida, look what they're doing with this have you seen that? The foreclosure thing where they have, like, called out judges from retirement, and they're all slamming in favor of the lenders, even though the lenders can't really produce deeds. I mean, they're really screwing the homeowners in the name of expediency, right?
I think that's probably where it winds up going.
That's what they're doing. And also, if you look like, I'm just going back to what you were saying about the state needing to have taxes. Well, what's going to happen if they never tax the rich or they don't have a progressive tax system is that they just squeeze who can't fight back. And so.
Right. And, you know, a little bit ago in referring to Afghanistan, you said it's all very Roman. So is that, Sandra. That's how the empire was driven to its knees.
Right. That's the thing. It's like the sort of never-ending search for resources, and you just sort of squeeze the regular people as much as you can, you know, which is I can say that looks like our future, because if you believe that deflation is what's going on, which is what I think is happening, you know, they have the whole inflation is I think depression is what is happening, and debt is a bad thing in when you're dealing with deflation, right?
Oh.
It's horrible. So,
yeah.
You know, so God knows what's going to happen here. Bring back the debtor's prison, because trust me, when shit hits it, you have a few people who can get the hell away, but none of these systems are designed to take a flood, you know, when a trickle turns into a flood.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, one of the reasons that Eric Cantor can sit there and say, well, you know, we got to reject this $50 billion plan because we've got to stop spending. And you know, the right wing's trying to get their you know, Emery and Eileen knuckle walker mouth breathers out there to start squealing about inflation. You know what? There ain't going to be no inflation for a while.
No, there's not going to be any inflation, and I just think that you know, it's really scary, because if you're in debt, you know, it's a horror show with that kind of, you know, depression. But anyway, I don't really know. I'm just kind of thinking, wow, you know, that passport is up to date.
You know, I got to get I got to get me one of those.
No, it's really bad, because, you know, I just, if I may say something personally, I'm sort of like operating in this kind of netherworld, because I just finished writing a review of the this journal called The Journal of Academic Librarianship. I mean, can you imagine? I'm sitting, you know, I'm thinking, what planet? You see what I mean? And how is it relating? Well, it's not, but it's better than starving.
Yeah, but there's a sort of relevance disconnect?
Oh, I don't know. It's just sort of, you know, it just goes to my, like, do I really know what the hell I'm doing? But, you know, because I can't see, no matter if I'm doing something like that, I can't really escape, you know, what we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway.
No, I get it. Well, let me run one thing past you before we wrap up for this evening. You know who Dan Hampton is?
No.
Okay, Dan. You know, this is our little moment of sports geekery, Sandra.
Oh, okay.
You know, former Hall of Fame Chicago Bears defensive lineman, and he yaks on the Pro Football Weekly TV show. So they were doing and you know, it's the time of year, and Jesus, you know, but they were doing their breakdown of you know, who needs to go where and what's going to happen in this NFL game and what's going to happen in that NFL game. And they got to the Vikings trip to play New Orleans.
Mm.
You might want to be sitting for this one.
Yep, I am.
Yeah, Dan Hampton says, the Vikings need to go down there and hit that town like Katrina.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah. I got the audio right here. I just wasn't going to subject
it to it. Are you going to play it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. And what was it, like crickets on the set, or what happened?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Oh, okay.
All right, next Thursday night, the Super Bowl champs host the Vikings in a rematch of last year's NFC title game.
Tommy, who's going to win this Open?
I like the Saints. Again, the Vikings, I think, are going to get off to a bit of a rocky start with no Sidney Rice. Percy Harvin will play, but you just don't know what's happening with him. And Brett Favre has not looked overly sharp in the preseason. I like the New Orleans Saints at home.
If you watched that playoff game last year, the Vikings need to go down there and hit that town like Katrina. I think the Vikings go down there and get it done.
Adrian Peterson, we haven't mentioned the name, maybe still the best player in the NFL.
There you go. The football.
That's all for this week for the
I would have liked it better if there had been crickets.
All these people just sort of go with it. That is so. Are you kidding me?
Isn't that disgusting?
It's disgusting. I mean, that should be regulated to the sort of inane connections that these sports people make to 9/11. I've heard a few of those, too.
Well, you know, yeah, I will never get over the time when the University of Alabama got beaten by Louisiana Lafayette or whatever they are, just humiliated at home, mind you. And in his press conference, Nick, $5 million man Saban, said, "This is like 9/11 and Pearl Harbor all rolled together."
Oh, dear God. I vaguely remember that story. Also with Homeboy, who had 5 second sex, that basketball player, basketball coach. He also brought up.
You can't say 5 second sex.
Well, apparently it was hella quick in his testimony. I'm like, girlfriend.
How could you tell?
Too bad for her. Anyway, that was like, where is it? Who? What? Anyway, yeah, he mentioned the 9/11 in some presser, and I'm just like, are you kidding me?
That just, oh, God.
Katrina, yeah, that's, and no one said anything about it, man.
No, hopefully they're catching some hell now. But, you know, apparently it's a real low-rent program. Again, it is Pro Football Weekly, and they've got a website, too, profootballweekly.com.
I mean, all of those stuff, it just reminds me you know that Jim Rome, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's when he had the nerve to speak at the Pat Tillman funeral. He must have dropped the name of his show, like, 40 times.
Oh God! Well, yeah, but he's a shameless self promoter. Yeah.
Well, anyway,
have a take and don't suck. Yeah.
Oh God, no! It's just, but I just, you know, all these people, that's bad. The Katrina thing, yeah, I don't even know what to say about that, and the fact that no one was fazed at all. Mm.
And you know, I don't know. Do you call for a guy to be fired for something like that?
I don't know, but it's just typical.
I don't know. Just make the dumbass go down to the lower ninth ward and see where it still is.
Yeah, no, it is. It's just beyond sort of, yeah, that's a bad one. I mean, I'd be inclined for at least a demotion or just someone, he needs to go away.
Yeah, just take a couple of weeks off without pay. That'll be fine.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, anyway, thanks for that, Bob.
Yeah, I know. You needed it, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not really surprised. But, yeah, I am surprised. What am I saying? That's over the top.
Well, I will go this far. Black dude. You know, black dude said that. Needs to hit, like, Katrina. And, you know, I'm sorry. I want... And maybe this makes me sound like a shitbird, but there's an even greater disconnect there.
Well, that guy is black, who said it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, come on. Good Lord. You don't have, no, he need to sit the hell down. That's a shame.
Unless I'm making a, making one of those Rush Limbaugh, Sherrod Brown mistakes. Well, I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, no, but I understand your point. But, yeah, that's, fairly shocking then, because you'd think that brother would have a little bit of sense.
Jacksonville High School, Jacksonville, Arkansas. Yada yada yada. Played at Arkansas. I don't know. He's got a real deep tan.
Well, listen.
No, okay. Well, no, we'll go white guy. We'll go white guy. I've got better light here. Okay, so I take it back.
Oh, listen, since you're on, oh, God, I forgot what I was going to say. Damn it. What was the deal with that hideous quarterback for the Steelers trying to get his games reduced?
I'm not sure which is sleazier, the Roethlisberger business Butch Davis at North Carolina trying to work out this sort of rolling suspension of what turns out to be the better part of his entire football team.
I always like that. That's always awesome. Wow.
You know, because they went in and played LSU Saturday night in Atlanta. And just got, well, they were on their way to getting stomped, and then, you know, a couple of dropped passes, and they could have won the ball game. But he was, you know, North Carolina was kind of behind the eight ball all along because of all of his players caught up in this this South Beach scandal. And so North Carolina sat some down voluntarily, but some were declared ineligible by the NCAA. And it was the better part of his defense. And so, you know, Butch Davis went to him and said, what do you say we only suspend them one at a time? Okay? Or we'll suspend them one game and not for another. In fact, he was trying to pull his football team together. It was an act of desperation. I guess as a coach I'd do the same. But you can't, but you know, it's Butch Davis. It's the Miami mindset. Screw the rules. All of that. And it can't be playing well at UNC because, you know, when's the last time you heard University of North Carolina and recruiting violations in the same breath? You know, try never.
Well, and then
Roethlisberger, you know.
I mean, no, but it's just like, really? You really are going to do that? God, I don't know. I just, every time I think about that story, I just think how sleazy. He's such a pig, you know. Why? Because he was able to go a month without forcing himself on some woman.
Yeah, see, I'm all rehabilitated.
And I'll end with just saying how amusing it was that Hawaii dropped 600 yards of offense on USC.
Lane Kiffin has got to be having kittens with crocheted tails over there.
That's gonna be fun to watch this season.
Oh, I'm hoping they got three or four losses in their hip pockets. But you know, it was funny how that Hawaii game sort of materialized once it was clear that they wasn't going to no bowl games.
Well, interesting, and also I can't wait to see what the hell Oregon does to them.
There could be some fun in the Pac-10 this year.
I'm out west, and you know, I always seem to hate USC.
Well, I get the sense you are not alone.
I hate them along, you know, with the Giants. I know there's some, not Giants, the 49ers and the Giants, different sport, but all in California.
Right, right. And you know, the Padres are falling apart at the seams, you know, 10-game losing streak.
Yeah, but they're still on top, though. That's the thing that's even more remarkable.
But they are the first division leader or league leader since the 1932 Cubs to go on a 10-game losing streak.
Well, how did salaries, you know, discrepancies. Good night.
Oh, well, you know, that's all the ownership. You know, somebody stop me before I shop again. A little salary cap goes a long way, but I kind of, you know, I'm so proud of what the Reds are doing this year. But on the other hand, I look at it and go, Jesus, you know, here's a small market team succeeding, and they'll never be able to sustain it because they won't be able to sustain the salaries.
No. They'll have to break that up right away, right? No, I mean, I don't really know, but, yeah, is it a fluke with Cincinnati? I guess they're for real, huh?
They certainly got all the looks of it.
Well, I'm kind of upset about the, is it the Rockets? No, is Nolan Ryan, is that Bush's old team?
Which?
Is that the Rangers, Texas Rangers?
Yeah. Well, among others, Astros.
They're doing pretty well, aren't they?
Rangers at haven't seen the standings lately. I mean, I got to admit, I'm more of a National League guy.
Oh, okay. Well, if that's the case, then just a quick question. I know this is probably going on too long with the sports, but what did the let's see, the National, the what league is the Washington team in?
Oh, they're National.
Well,
that's what used to be Montreal.
Okay, well, what did they do to that pitcher that's all the rage? What happened to him?
Oh, blew him up?
I mean, wow, that was, I'm kind of...
Yeah, that was quick. Is that where you're going?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, my God, because he has to get this sort of surgery that will take him out for 18 months or something?
Yeah, what is it, like the Tommy John surgery? Yeah.
Okay, so that was like, we just wrecked your whole career. Goodbye?
I call it the Kerry Wood phenomenon, where you take a kid out of the minors who's showing great potential, who should stay in the minors for a couple of 3 years, work on technique, work on his repertoire, you know, work on his available pitches, and then you bring him up. But no, you see a hot prospect, and the economics of baseball now insist that you bring him up now, and
okay,
you know, pitch him every third day.
Okay, because see, I didn't understand, because I thought he was a young stud, and I was thinking, what happened?
Well, he was.
Okay.
And they just blew him all to thunderation.
Oh, wow.
By the way, I don't know if this is true or not. I'm going way off topic, but back to the creepy bastard that's going to burn the Quran. CNN says they have not vetted this so-called iReport, but they're also putting it up on the website. Infamous pastor Terry Jones, known for his activism against the Gainesville mayor and for his Burn a Quran Day, has been arrested for possession of child pornography.
Problem as a Pentagon, huh?
Yeah, well, I guess. Late last night, Pastor Terry Jones, not of Monty Python fame, was arrested for sharing pictures of children in various states of nudity over the popular file-sharing network LimeWire.
Okay, well, I mean, of course, whatever, but I'm always skeptical when it's kiddie porn, I gotta tell you.
That scares the daylights out of me.
You know, because I think that is the trump card. So government COINTELPRO like that.
Well, see, I saw David in Tennessee directed my attention to an NPR story the other day about kiddie porn and the fact that you don't have to work real hard to find it, and then the FBI is on your doorstep the day before you did it.
Well, exactly.
It's like pre-crime.
No. It's just bizarre, and you're upset. That's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm not even talking about the sort of hideousness of the crime. It's how it just sort of pops up. See, that whole thing with Scott Ritter, I don't know, were you talking? Somebody was talking about that. You know, I'm not feeling that. I'm not even believing it. I got to be honest with you. It's too convenient. It's too odd, that one.
Well, and we have, and part of this, Sandra, is a function of the way this country operates, I guess emotionally or psychically or existentially, I don't know what the right word is. But because of our puritanical fantasies, we tend to have some very, very dark places in our own souls. And that leads, one, we've got a punishment fetish. So we love to see people punished for this kind of thing. On the Internet, I mean, the guy that NPR interviewed said, you know, we keep this thing literally stored in a lead-lined vault, talking about the hard drive with the kiddie porn on it. Because it's handled, and he said, we handle this like it's radioactive.
Well, you know, I mean, this is such a, you know, it's such a tricky, it's always a tricky subject, this, but I'm with you with the sort of almost abnormal focus and obsession with it, because on the same hand, you will throw that same child in jail for life here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? So the sort of hysteria about the sex with children, it just doesn't gel in lieu of everything else we do to children in this country, you know? I understand
what you're saying. I mean, look, I've been taken down for a night because, bless his heart, my son is 14 years old and has all the libido and urges of a 14-year-old boy, and came in and decided to take a walk on the porn side on the production computer one night. You know, I told people about it. It's no big deal. But it scares the life out of me because those ads are out there, you know, underage babes. And just one stupid click, and the party is over. That's what that NPR story made abundantly clear. You don't even have to be trying that hard.
Well, no, but it's always amazing, though, the sort of celebrities who only have to say they were doing research, and all of a sudden they're off scot-free. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know that was Pete Townsend, and Pete Townsend was in England and was treated a little bit differently.
And that was surprising. I mean, I don't know if he was just an exception, but I've heard that one used before with other accused. But you know, it's a bit. Anyway, it's interesting that that's what they've arrested him for.
Well, I haven't seen any other verification. It'll be interesting to see if it comes out. But
well, that's that Petraeus. Don't mess.
You know what? That's the first thing I thought.
Don't mess. Oh my God. Wait. Listen. I gotta go.
All right. See you, Sandra. This was wonderful.
Bye.
Bye now. You know, not that. I'm with Sandra. Not to put on the little tinfoil hat or check out the window for the black helicopters. But do you think there's nobody in the Defense Department that if General Petraeus picks up the phone and says, I need some kiddie porn on this guy's computer? But then again, it's Terry Jones. He's a fundamentalist. Okay? It may not be anything nearly as nefarious as what Sandra and I are sort of paranoidly speculating upon. He's a fundamentalist Christian. Of course he's got kiddie porn on his computer. Is that too harsh? How many of these stories do we have to read? And then LimeWire? Come on. Really? LimeWire? Oh, I go way back to when Peter Godbold was giving me the Ten Commandments of a Clean Computer, and he said, "Thou shalt not do peer-to-peer on thy production computer, or thy network will die." Because, as Peter said, you know, it's just filthy from top to bottom. So, but you know, forgive my glee if it's the truth. Yeah, I don't think the Obama administration had to do anything. Again, the guy is who he is. You know, scratch a fundamentalist Christian and you'll find, you know, a diddler, a rapist. You know the drill. Especially their leadership. You know, this is the sexual abuse of children is not something that the Roman Catholic Church has title ownership to. Now they own a big chunk of it, but they don't own it all. So, you know, worth your consideration. This being Labor Day, and by the way, the phone lines are open if you want to jump in, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. But this being Labor Day, a couple of things came to mind. If you want the poster child for what is wrong in America, you need look no further than Mott's. Ever had their applesauce? Their canned fruit, whatever? The strike against Mott's apple juice, they do juice too. Gosh, it just looks so wholesome. It's got the label with the shiny red apple on it. Well, more than 300 union members are on the picket line at Mott's. people that have been there for over a decade, maybe decades. Well, get this. It's not the usual thing where the company says, well, you know, we've been losing money. It's hard times. You know, we need labor to give some concessions. And labor says, you know, we don't want to give any concessions. You take it out, you know, take it out of the CEO's hide. Take it out of your stockholders. No, no. Last year, not kidding, last year, Mott's and its parent company, Dr. Pepper Snapple, by the way, had profits. Now, we're not talking about income. We're talking about, you know, after everything is separated out, profits. Mott's had profits. Dr. Pepper Snapple had profits of $555 million. And with profits of $555 million, Mott's went to their union and demanded $1.50 an hour pay cut and a pension freeze. By the way, that $555 million is a record for that company. They've never made so much money in all their life, their corporate life. A union worker at Mott's makes $19 an hour. The area average is $14. Tina Berry is the company's senior vice president for corporate affairs, and she said, when there's a situation when you have wages and benefits out of line with the local market and industry norms, however difficult it may be, it's something we have an obligation to address, as if there is some sort of moral crisis in New York State. Because the Mott's workers are making more than the wage slaves in other companies. Shh. Here's where that labor part comes in. The problem is not that Mott's workers are making too much. The problem is that the other workers, who are probably non-union, are making too little! They were making $19 an hour, and their company pulled down a $555 million profit. And they want more. By God, that could have been $555 million and 29 cents if it wasn't for that damned union. By the way, on this Labor Day 2010... it's worth noting that union membership in the United States dropped 10% in 2009. That's the biggest organized labor drop in membership in 25 years. How about that? So much for that business about Obama being a pro-labor communist. But maybe that union membership has dropped because, well, there were promises made at the beginning of the Obama administration, which to this day have not been met. Name me a problem. Do me a favor, name me a problem in this country, and I'll warrant you that all or some part of that problem could be remedied by increased union membership. You want that Eisenhower America, teabagger? You want to go back to where your little wife stayed at home and met you at the door in her little A-line dress, and Wally and the Beav came running in from school? You want to live in a house like that, Mr. Teabagger? Join a union, you useless sack of shit. And maybe you can have it. But no. I don't see no need for a union. Maybe you'll be like, what are these clowns' names? They live down in southern West Virginia. They work for Massey. Paul and Jim Lucas. Article over at Mother Jones magazine, Remembering Mother Jones in Coal Country, by Josh Harkinson. Josh apparently didn't know much about West Virginia's place in labor history, so he went down to the Coal River Valley. He says, mentioning that you work for Mother Jones doesn't always open doors, but when I drove up one steep dirt road to a tidy mobile home, I received a surprisingly warm reception. Paul Lucas said my employer's namesake was familiar. I remember that name from that video, Mother Jones speaking before all the men. He'd seen the video in a class that he took last February to become state certified as a coal mining apprentice. A non-union coal mining apprentice, because the union has been broken like a dry twig. Was she involved with Blair Mountain? Author said he didn't know. I believe she's involved with old Blair Mountain. Had a lot to, and his daddy chimed in, had a lot to do with Cabin Creek and Paint Creek. His daddy is a non-union miner for Massey Energy. He works at Upper Big Branch. He was not affected by that, well, not directly affected. Everybody there was affected by the disaster. And Paul Lucas says, of the miners that from the Blair Mountain Battle of Blair Mountain days, these miners weren't even getting paid American currency. I definitely think that the union was needed back in the Mother Jones days. Note, please, the past tense. Definitely think that the union was needed back in the Mother Jones days. She was something, Mother Jones. We could use a whole army of Mother Joneses, but Mother Jones' courage, it's not much to be found these days. Don Blankenship, among others, but largely Don Blankenship, broke the UMWA, where once upon a time 90% of all coal miners in America were represented by the UMWA. That number is... down to barely 33%. A union miner gets a pension and some of the best health benefits in the United States. But non-union Massey workers, they get a better hourly rate. Trust me, it's a long-term bargain for Don Blankenship. The daddy of the two men, Jim Lucas, is off on comp right now because there was a slate fall in the mine and it landed on his leg. The story says, as he sat in his living room, a machine periodically drained fluids from his infected calf. Ooh. But here's... Anybody with half a brain knows that conditions at Upper Big Branch were contributed to by Massey's laissez-faire attitude toward worker safety. But not Jim Lucas. He says, regardless of what anyone says, I believe that sometimes there are just extenuating circumstances and things happen that are really just beyond men's control. Now, that goes against the expert from the Mine Safety and Health Administration who said, there is no such thing, or rather, he said, all mine accidents are preventable. And then this passage from the article, which just made me scream. I read all this stuff before I go to air with it, so I can hopefully not scream on air. A part-time minister known as preacher to younger workers, Jim Lucas sees God much as Mother Jones saw the Union, as his men's ultimate counselor and protector. Only problem was, Mother Jones was real! knowing that her husband will share the gospel with other miners if he's ever trapped in the mine, is a comfort to his wife, Debbie. If that's the way the Lord takes him, she said, we'll be okay. Of course, Massey recently settled for $3 million with a couple of families from Upper Big Branch who had not been represented by counsel. They had no lawyer. They didn't realize they could have gotten perhaps $10 million, $25 million, $50 million. But $3 million was enough. If that's the way the Lord takes him, we'll be okay. No, you won't. No, you won't. And then there's Paul Lucas. Now, I'm more non-union than I am union. But Paul's got a work life ahead of him, and he is thinking. But I also worry what would happen in this state if there wasn't a union. To be competitive, Don Blankenship has to pay what he does. But if he's successful in getting rid of the union completely in this state, what's going to happen to coal wages? Oh, Paul Lucas, they're going to love you down to the company store. They're just going to love you. Especially when you go in permanent debt. But that's where we stand on Labor Day 2010. That's where we stand. And it's not a nice place to be. What's the country coming to? We lost 10% of the union membership of this country in 2009. You know what? That's just fine and dandy by the right wing. Next year, they'd like to lose 20%, and the year after that, they'd like to lose 40%, until eventually you're down to zero, and it's a workers' paradise. Triangle shirtwaist factory fires and Haymarket riots, battles of Blair Mountain. Oh, those are the good old days when those workers get uppity and you can just machine gun them. Let's see, $20 an hour, 8 times 160, 105. That's $800 a week at $20 an hour, because I can't do complicated multiplication on the fly. Before taxes. But those workers at Mott are living too high on the hog to suit Tina Barry. Wonder if Tina Barry's done a study of other salaried workers in the area and compared it with what she makes. Wonder how she'd like it if her wages got normalized. Probably not so much. Yeah, and Patty pointing out to me, the biggest point of the Mott labor story is that when they locked out the union, they did it because they have their product now being made by their competitor. So the union now really has what to fight back with? Damn them and Harry Reid for not passing or even trying to pass the Employee Free Choice Act, and that is the point. Barack Obama would have signed the Employee Free Choice Act. Harry Reid stood in a room on January the 21st, 2009. I was there. You've heard me say it before. And upon my question said, we will have a card check bill by summer. That would have been the summer of 2009. It is two summers gone now, and Harry Reid has not found the leadership qualities, the strength, the spine, if you will, to get it done. It's infuriating. So, out here in the provinces, a suggestion. No Mott's juice. No Mott's applesauce. No Mott's nothing. And a phone call or two if you care to find their corporate website. And tell them. I won't buy it, and I'll tell everybody what's going on. Quit locking your workers out, and we'll go back to business as usual. Because, as Patty noted, with Mott contracting its production out to other places, the only hope of those union workers is us. You know, I do most of my shopping at Kroger's because it's a union shop. And this is another one of those communications moments because I don't know how well unions communicate amongst themselves. I'm not a member of one, so I can't really say. But my next trip to Kroger's, I'll tell every one of those members of the UFCW that I see that, by God, they need to know what's going on at Mott's and that they need to not buy Mott's and they need to tell at their local not to buy Mott's. You know, what the hell would be wrong with having an informational picket at grocery stores all around the United States? Don't buy Mott's. Could we do that? God, I'd like to think I live in a country where maybe, just maybe, we could. It is Labor Day, and we'll take your calls and your thoughts. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Direct dial comes into 304-658. Now, I already did that. Your nickel, right. Yeah, there we go. Email's Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. I know we get awfully frustrated with the leadership in this country. But as I said, I think in the last couple of days, looking to the leadership is, well, it's a fool's errand. The only hope we have is the hope we ourselves create. And you can do a good thing by beginning a movement, wherever you are. Don't buy that Mott's garbage, and don't buy, well, maybe you'll just have to lay off apple juice and that sort of stuff altogether, but no Mott's. Let it rot on the shelves. And tell people why. Because there are 300 working men and women, there are 300 American families in New York State who are counting on you, and who, if they lose, won't just be losing for themselves, they'll be losing for the next victims that corporate America, rife and ripe and flush with profit, decides to go after. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Head on RadioNetwork.com. Still looking for that thrifty 250 subscribers, $10 a month. We'll be right back. I'm Bob. We'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Indeed, indeed, and we are less than an hour away from the debut of the Rick Smith Show in its Monday night, Monday through Friday night time slot. Probably just going for an hour or so tonight and maybe working out the kinks for it, getting all the bugs stomped and so forth. But eventually it will be 3 hours of some of the most scintillating liberal radio conversation that you have ever heard. Rick is as good as they come. Following this show immediately, you might have to, as I said, you might have to restart or refresh your player. Because we will be transferring from one horn stream to another horn stream. So that, but trust me, you want to be there for this. Hell, you want to give Rick the, the karmic encouragement of him knowing that you're there. 9 minutes past the hour. And enough of this palavering on my part. As I said, we are looking to build the Thrifty 250, $10 a month, subscribers, 250 people at $10 a month, and we'll be okay. And I, the sooner that happens, the sooner I can stop talking about this, and I will be thrilled to put the name of the Thrifty 250 on the website, as long as you tell me that it's all right to do so. So away we go to the phone lines. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Sparky?
Yes.
Cool.
Do you mind if I reveal a little secret?
As long as it doesn't involve anything involving my nudity, go right ahead.
No, it's my little joke, running joke with you and Boss Man Wayne.
Ah, the dues?
My horn dues?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, seeing it's Labor Day and we're talking about unions. You know, you pay dues for people to represent you, and I think you do a hell of a job representing us, Bob.
That's one of the kindest things anybody's ever said, Sparky, and I thank you for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting that out of the way, now can I talk to you about my little, what I did today?
Oh, absolutely.
Labor Day picnic?
Oh, yes.
Well, have you've heard of AB 32, the California Clean Air Initiative?
Oh, yeah.
And then there's this thing coming up now, Prop 23, sponsored by the Koch brothers.
Why am I not surprised?
Oh, you wouldn't be. But and a few other random oil companies from Texas, but none from California. They want to repeal AB 32, which has already created over 500,000 clean energy jobs in California. And it's
been, and they want to take all that away and make all that disappear.
Yes, they want to take that all. Well, it's based on the unemployment figures. They think that since there's a high unemployment right now, that clean energy jobs are not going to create jobs. They'll just keep cost more jobs. If you do any research on it, and all the stuff we've gained. I mean, they're putting in solar panels, they're putting in windmills. I got talked to guys today that worked on the windmills at Hatchet Mountain. And it was just like exciting, you know. I said, I wish I could have went up there, but I can't climb 300 feet up a tower, you know, to work on the things. And they said they were easy. The 44 windmills, just go up, drop the cables down. But then they got them all hooked up. And then what happened is they had to go back and they had to pull more cable up because the engineer made a mistake. They pulled the cable too tight to where he wanted it. But the whole thing turns, you know, into the wind.
Sure.
So they had to pull slack back up and read.
I'm glad there's people out there that are willing to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go up 300 foot in one of them towers. And they say they station the guys. What they do is they station the guys in the tower when they pull down the cables and they feed the cables down. They're on a ladder and they're on a little clevis pulley system there. You know, they're hooked to a cable on the ladder. I mean, they build the tower with the ladders in it, and then they pull the cables in from the bottom up to the top, and they connect them up. And then the guys on the ladder have to tie off all the cables as they go down the tower. It's quite a process.
Oh, I can imagine. And I would be devastated on the you know, that... That's one of the reasons, Sparky, that I can revere people in this country, no matter what they do for a living. Because you know what? I would be shaking with my foot on the first rung of the ladder, five rungs up, and I'd just be a mess.
Yeah, but it's a big tube. It's not like you can look out. Just don't look down.
You know what? But you still okay. It's a big tube. That means that you bang your chin on the ladder rungs all the way down if you do slip.
No, you know that you with those clips. If there's a cable that runs down with the guys that build the tower, the electricians go in there after they build the tower, and it's not on a cable. It's on the ladder itself. It's like a braking mechanism that runs down the side. It's like a pulling mechanism that runs down the side of the ladder, and if all of a sudden it goes real quick, it'll break like if an elevator falls.
Oh, let's not bring elevators falling into this, Sparky, or I'll be taking the stairs for the rest of my days, okay?
I bet you didn't know that.
No, it's kind of like when Richard called and told me about the high fructose corn syrup in my damn tomato soup.
Okay.
You people are bound and determined to turn me into an agoraphobic. Sheesh. But you know what? Okay. There's people out there, and we forget about it because you know when a union laborer in the top of a smokestack falls and dies. Or somebody gets electrocuted or drowns or something like, you know, we don't bring out guys in uniforms with bagpipers. We have a quiet little funeral, but you know what? Labor Day is a day, Sparky, for remembering the people who do put their lives on the lines every day, just to make sure that this, what's left of this culture, continues to go.
Yeah, we have a day to remember that memorialize the dead in the labor movement. It's April 28th.
Yeah, I know.
That's the Workers' Memorial Day. And on my last job, I mean, we had a safety meetings every morning. That's the difference between union jobs and non-union jobs, I would imagine. But you have a safety meeting every morning before you go to work, and you tell, well, everybody looks around and says, what do you got for safety? Is there a problem? And you tell, if there's something going on that's happening in your area that could be a problem, and you want your supervisor to tell the other worker, the other trades crew, have this remedied or do this remedy, or somebody did this, or there's a forklift driver that's acting crazy that's from another trade. But it's always safety first on a union job.
And you really cannot say that. You can't say that about a non-union operation.
No, because you can't bring up a safety. You can't go up to somebody and say, this isn't right and this is unsafe, and they'll say, well, go back to work, we'll find somebody. But no, I'm not working on this. And they can't smoke you for that on a union job. You know what I mean? My smoke, lay you off, fire you.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's kind of a slang for when they do lay you off. It's just, I got smoked. But it happens to everybody on a construction job. Sooner or later, it happens to me all the time.
Well, you know, it's like the business with the Mott's people. All we've got left is what we do as purchasers, as customers, to let them know that, you know, those 300 folks on the picket line there aren't going to get smoked. Because ultimately, you know, they've already locked them out. Ultimately, the goal is to get rid of those 300 jobs and hire them 300 people at $14 an hour with no doggone union.
Let me ask you, did you get that from Trumka's speech the other day?
No.
Oh, because he was talking about Mott's the other day in a speech he made.
Mott's is a sort of canary in the coal mine, if you will, for what's going to happen to labor during the remainder of Barack Obama's presidency. At least the way I see it.
Manufacturing jobs.
It's I don't have a good feeling.
Well, that's food processing area. I've worked on some food processing plants before. A lot of them have been represented by the Teamsters, and a lot of them are unionized. Here in California, they are anyway. But in other right-to-work states, they may not be.
The thing is, this is New York State, Sparky.
I know. It's getting...
Well, it takes me back to what John said when he called Friday night about, New York's broken, too. We've got to start turning things around, and the fact of the matter is, the we part of we have to start turning things around, it begins to feel like, well, no, not begins. It's been feeling like for a while that if anything's going to get turned around, it's going to be the folks on the ground who do the turning. Because we're not getting the help we need from up top. You know, maybe it's our, as David in Tennessee said the other night, maybe it's our job to form the parade and then leave it to them to get in front of it. Oh, I lost Sparky. Doggone it. Sparky calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Bob, this is Andy from California.
Oh, hey, Andy. It's California night.
Man, I guess it's the time difference that does it. God, you've been really busy. I've been trying to get through for the past week. I was 0 for 3.
Damn, I'm sorry.
I mean, you got a lot of people calling. You got to like that.
For the most part, Andy, I've had six stacked up lines for the better part of the last couple of weeks. It's been a little slow this evening, I guess, because a lot of people are still out Labor Day.
Yeah, I would think it would be slower today. It's a beautiful day here, too.
Oh, we had a gorgeous one. September came in, and everything changed here, Andy. Suddenly, you know, it was 72 degree days and 58 degree nights. If you had this year around, you'd feel like you were in paradise.
That's good. Yeah, that's nice. Well, that's nice on a Labor Day anyway, too, where everybody has off. And beginning the whole new school year and football season taking off. Nice day for football.
Yeah, I got to admit, I geeked a little bit on Saturday. I watched some ball.
Did you?
Yeah. I watched the University of Florida game against Miami of Ohio until I was fit to retch, because every other word out of the two announcers was, "Where's Tim Tebow?" And I'm just so over Tim Tebow. Of course, I've been over him for about 5 years, but that was tough to swallow.
Some of these preseason games just kill me. I mean, they're such lopsided. Your old alma mater, Alabama, they're playing San Jose State. They friggin' just mopped
them. Oh, they dismantled them.
Those guys.
But that's, you know, the big boys always start that way. I mean, Florida had Miami of Ohio. I think they had one win last year. Even my poor little Mountaineers started with the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers.
Yeah, 31 zip, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, you pitched a shutout. Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, but it's a nice start. Get the confidence level up.
Yeah, ain't gonna last. we go down to LSU in late September, and it will not be pretty. They'll get their dose of grow up when that happens.
I've got tickets next weekend to see the Cal Bears play Colorado Buffs.
Oh, that'll be a fun game.
Yeah, Colorado did pretty good against CSU the other day. I think it was like 24-3 or something like that.
I don't know. How's Cal loaded this year?
Yeah. They should be pretty decent. And I think Stanford's actually supposed to win the Pac-12 or whatever it is now, Pac-10, Pac-12. Stanford, I guess, has the team with, well, with your athletic director's son from West Virginia.
Right, right.
He's the big guy.
Pay no attention to that ringing phone there. Yeah, go ahead.
One reason I was trying to get through to you, when you had that gig going on where you let us know that those 10 sitting senators all gave PAC money to Mr. Governor Joe Manchin, needless to say, that really pissed me off.
Didn't do much for me either, Andy.
I called every one of those bastards up, and every one of them, there are two of them I didn't get through to. I just had to leave messages for Debbie Stabenow and Tom Harkin. I just left messages. Tom Harkin was supposed to get back to me, and somebody from his office was supposed to explain to me why they did that, because they didn't know. But everybody else played dumb and had no clue, and Klobuchar and Inouye actually told me to call their PAC directly, which I actually did, and talk to them, because they had no clue why they would do that. And everybody else I called, Conrad, Leahy, Udall, you know, the whole gang, their staffers were just played stupid. They had no idea that he had given money.
Shocked.
Yeah, no idea. We don't have any control. We don't know why he would do it. And I tried to explain to them that, you know, your guy just lost total credibility with the progressive community. Total credibility is gone. You gave to a dirty fossil fuel candidate, you know, man? You gave to a guy that's behind killer coal. This guy is so far beyond the pale. Why don't you just give your money away to Republicans? You know what?
Well, when you give to Joe Manchin, you are giving to a Republican.
Yeah. The only one that came clean right away when I asked was Schumer's staffer, who said, this woman was unreal. She goes, well, of course we gave to Manchin. He's going to win.
Oh, Jesus.
Why? That's what she said.
Well, she's not watching the polls in West Virginia then.
She goes, Manchin's going to win. That's why we gave money to him. Oh, son of a gun.
Well, you know, you can't. You know, I love going to the horse track and laying my money on the one bet on the bet $2 to win one. Yeah, I love those.
Right.
And I guess that's what she was saying, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just so sad. It is just so, we have no representation. And like you were just saying, man, it's kind of started at the ground up. When are we going to just start shutting this place down?
Well, yeah, I mean,
country,
I mean,
until we start getting some
change. This Mott story just blows my mind. Somewhere in there, where is Mott's not violating the law, the labor law, somewhere in that whole sordid mess?
Even if there are laws, the politicians, when it comes to labor, when it comes to people, they don't uphold them. It's only what the corporations want. And that is unbelievable that they can just outsource that work to another company, and that company will do it, especially if it's a non-union shop. Go to a competitor, let them pick up the business, and then go back and take it back again after they get the unions, you know, squashed. Unreal.
That's,
I don't know how you fight that.
Well, I think it has to happen economically. But the question is, are there enough people who give a damn about working Americans out there to make Mott's feel it at the checkout line?
True. Unfortunately, you don't have the big blowhorn to let people know that, but that's what you have to do, right? You have to hit them in the pocketbook. That's the only thing they understand, the corporations understand, is to be hit in the pocketbook.
And when I saw that name, and I don't know if it resonated with you or not, but when I saw that, the fact that they are owned by Dr. Pepper Snapple.
Right.
You know how it is with my sad little mind, Andy. I immediately flashed on all those years going up and down the road hearing Flush Flimball, "I drink Snapple every day, my friends." I'll bet you do. I bet you wash down those OxyContins with a good, cold, clean Snapple every chance you get, Buster.
Well, I guess they're out of Texas, too, which isn't a good sign.
Right. Well, Dr. Pepper was first formulated in Texas.
Right. And that's one of the larger union-busting states, right-to-work states in the,
oh, yeah,
in the country.
But Andy, I think what galled me most was that Jill, what's her name? What was Jill's name? Tina, you know. Tina Berry, the company's senior vice president for corporate affairs. When there's a situation where you have wages and benefits out of line with the local market and industry norms, however difficult it may be, it's something we have an obligation to address. An obligation to whom, Andy? I mean, you know numbers a hell of a lot better than I know numbers. An obligation to whom? Shareholders?
You know, everything.
They had $555 million in profit last year.
Right. Everything is just a wealth transfer. It's just a transfer of wealth. And if the executives can take it from the working people, they will. Because their salaries are going to go up. You know, they're going to suck up more money, and they're going to take it from the low-level workers. It's just a wealth transfer. That's all it is.
And it's sickening.
They're so damn greedy, they'll just take it. And their salary levels will go up. You know, if the average worker's salary went up the same as a CEO's salary in the past 30 years, wages beat like $100 an hour for people, working people. I mean, it's just insane. Because CEO's salaries have just skyrocketed.
Well, and again, I come back to Tina Berry. Reckon she got a raise this year?
You got it. She'll get a raise for this. No, Spike gets on the line once in a while from Pennsylvania, and it was a couple weeks ago, I guess, I was listening to it, and I thought it was just great, and he took the words right out of my mouth, and it's just, it has to do with labor as well. I'm talking about the work environment, and how I even notice, I've been working for about 30 years myself. Of course, I'm unemployed now, but it is amazing how inhumane I think it has gotten in the United States. And how you could just tell you have no rights and you're just going like a friggin', you know, one of those hamsters on a treadmill like crazy. and you're just getting treated like dirt. I mean, I really think in the United States, the work environment has turned into a human rights violation.
It has. I mean, compare. Every time I see a story like this Mott's thing, Andy, I can't help thinking about the French. And, you know, you mentioned the French to the right wing, cheese-eating surrender monkeys. But I think about the French. And if this happened in France, damn, the bus drivers would say, man, we strike.
Right.
And the railway workers would say, hey, we strike. And the teachers would strike. And then the judges would strike. And pretty soon the Mott's problem would get cleared up.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, I'm not yelling at you.
Absolutely. You'd have this massive cohesion and this, you know, massive brotherliness among the people, among the workers, that they know if somebody somewhere in one corner segment of the economy has to give in, then eventually it's going to happen to them, too. Because that's, you know, it's piece by piece, block by block. That's how the guys like the Koch brothers operate.
And, well, there's another element, too, I think, Andy. There's another element as well. And that is, in a nation like France, essentials of living are taken care of. And the law mandates a certain standard of living for working people. You know, that those 6 weeks of vacation every year?
Right.
And there's a viable social safety net for everybody.
A 35-hour work week, too?
Yeah, so when the people see injustice being done to their fellow workers, they don't immediately say, well, you know, he's making too much money, which is what America has been taught to do over the course of a generation. Well, screw him. He wants $19 an hour and the people are making $14? Well, he doesn't need to make $19 an hour instead of asking the question, why aren't the people making $14 making $19?
Right. Right. It's just this defeatism here. You know, the total defeatist attitude that when you don't have strong unionization, when you don't have the people working together, it's just so hard to mount an opposition. Anyway, too, when Spike brought up his comment, I think he has his representative, is Paul Kanjorski.
Yeah.
There, and I just know, too, you talk about a Wall Street hack. And him making the statement, too, Kanjorski, when Spike was on, that if they hadn't bailed out the bankers on Wall Street, you know, the holy hell would have broken loose and the country would have went down. That's total BS. Total BS. Robert Reich has come out and said, Krugman has come out and said, so what if a few banks went under? All they would be done is broken up. Somebody else would take their place. That's all. You know, Kanjorski is a friggin' hack, just a Wall Street hack. Completely. And two, I heard you in one show, you're talking about Neanderthals. I'm not sure what the context was now. I'm not sure in I guess it had to do with different
adaptation, yeah. I was later corrected and told that all humans, or many humans, contain like 2% Neanderthal DNA, but at any rate.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to mention. You know, now the new theory is that the Neanderthals actually didn't go away. They intermarried with the modern-day Caucasians because we all have Neanderthal DNA, right? And, you know, the black people do not have any Neanderthal DNA at all. It's only Eastern, it's only European Caucasians,
right,
that have the Neanderthal DNA.
Yeah, people who could freely range back and forth across the Eurasian continent.
Right. So actually, that's not a good sign, because probably they were more warlike than other races.
Well, again, you know, their tool design doesn't change a whole lot, unless I get corrected. You know, the way they were doing things 200,000 years ago was the way they were doing things 100,000 years ago. Although there may be some indications that they brought things to humanity that we didn't have beforehand, they may have been the first people, if I recall correctly, and I may not, the first people to treat their dead with some reverence.
Mm. I've heard, too, that some of the Neanderthal cave dwellings that they found have some really wonderful art inside the dwellings, too, of pictures that they've...
I don't know if that's the Neanderthals or strictly, you know, Homo sapiens.
I thought that was actually Neanderthals that they found. Some really nice artwork that had been done. So they were also artisans and very good at sculpting things and doing painting type work because they did it in their cave. Anyway, you know, another thing that really has upset me too is this deal with the senator from Wyoming, Alan Simpson.
Yeah, oh,
not getting his butt kicked off that commission. Like, why do we even have that commission?
First of all, why is it there?
Absolutely. This is this complete. I'm completely disillusioned with what this moron in the White House is doing. And like you said, instead of doing the card check and doing the things he could be doing, he's rearranging the goddamn furniture in the White House, and his wife is going off to Spain having a good old time. And here we are with 15 million people unemployed. But I called up Dianne Feinstein, which is my local senator, and I called up everybody I could to get rid of Alan Simpson off of that commission, and why do we even have a commission? And anytime you mention Dinos or Dinos again, you know, Democrats in name only.
Yeah.
Shout out to Matt for this one, too, that mentioned Dianne Feinstein. As soon as I got on the phone and asked them to get rid of Alan Simpson and we shouldn't have a commission. As a matter of fact, I think Social Security should be doubled from what it is. And, of course, the easy fix is just to stop that, like, $106,000, $107,000.
Yeah, end the cap.
Or limit and just, you know, up it to $250,000 or unlimited so we can really take care of our people with a social safety net. Since not many people are going to have pensions anymore when they age, but the first thing I got out of that jackass's mouth, the guy on Dianne Feinstein's line, was, oh, Ms. Feinstein believes in fiscal responsibility. She believes in lowering the deficit. Don't you know we're going to have to cut back on social programs? And she doesn't mind cutting back on social. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? I mean, are you really for real? She wants to cut back on Social Security? And he goes, well, for one, she's for upping the age limit of retirement to over 70 years old when you can get Social. I go, what?
No, see, I still maintain, Andy, that one of the best things you can do about Social Security is to lower, not raise, the retirement age.
Right. Let's get more people working, and people that want to leave work, get them out of the workforce, for God's sakes. But anyway, I lost it. I just started screaming at this guy, and he hung up on me. But when you mentioned Dinos, man, remember her.
Oh, she's among the worst. I mean, if you recall, it's her hubby who has profited very nicely from the Iraq war.
Absolutely. He's a war criminal. And
don't they own some sort of a resort hotel or some such where all the workers are non-union?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it's Feinstein.
Yeah, her husband is a big industrialist. He's involved with a lot of corporations. I think a lot of corporate boards. They own a lot of real estate.
Oh, and by the way, Spike has chimed in, Andy. He says, we know Kanjorski is a Wall Street hack, but his opponent is a Wall Street hack who uses racism, xenophobia, and ignorance as his main platform, that being Lou Barletta. So sadly, we have only the lesser of two evils. I'll accept a tool of the rich if he at least has the effing decency not to promote hate. Either the limbo bar is getting raised, or the ethical stat bar is getting lowered. You know, you pick your metaphor.
Right.
So, God, now that had to be frustrating. Oh Jesus. So yeah, I'm sure Senator Feinstein is happy to balance the budget on the backs of people who are already hungry and jobless. That's a great strategy.
Isn't it something? I'm not sure, but I would not doubt at all. She might be one of these privatizers. She wants to privatize part of it. And I just saw some numbers the other day where, like, people in the 45 to 55 age group have lost like 40% of their 401ks or 50%.
Oh yeah, it's a monumental number.
Yeah, and you're really going to put that stuff in the market? And think people can manage their own money without getting shellacked by Wall Street? What, are you kidding me? I mean, this is a joke.
It's designed for them to get shellacked.
Right. You can't beat the house.
House always wins. Red, no, black, damn! You know, happened to me in Vegas. I was, you know, I was obligated to go and play one thing of roulette, so I, on black. And as soon as the wheel, I thought, I should have done red. No, I should have done, red. Okay, goodbye. Lesson learned.
Right, Wall Street is just a gambling casino. It's just a casino, and for people that don't know what they're doing, they're going to lose. They're going to lose their retirements. What better way? and Wall Street will get rich because they just pick up the commissions and the fees.
Sure. And, you know, back to my question about what the heck would be wrong with a penny tax on every share?
It used to be. We used to have a tax.
Yeah,
a
transfer tax. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. That'd be great. They're making all the money. They're sucking the money. You know, it used to be Wall Street, the financial industry, used to be 15% of all corporate profits in the United States. Now it's over 40% of all corporate profits are from the financial firms. You tell me that they can't afford a penny tax on a transaction?
Right. I mean, you know, because you can hear the guy, you know, that guy that's got four phones sitting in front of him. He's chomping a cigar, and he grabs the phone and says, "Get me 50,000 shares of Amalgamated Bullshit now."
Right.
Well, that's 50,000 pennies.
And most of that trading is hedge funds. It's not retail people. It's not little people making those trades. 90% of those trades are hedge funds or institutional investors. Oh, definitely we should. And like you had a caller from New York, I think, a few days ago. That's exactly could help New York out of its money problems. I mean, no question. And my thing has always been the rich are not taxed enough, no doubt in this country, nor are the corporations. You know, Alan S. Blinder, I don't know if you ever heard of him. He's from Princeton. He used to be a Fed vice chairman. He said that his studies show that the average corporation in the United States only pays 8% effective tax rate. 8%. The rate is actually 35, but after you get said and done, you know, with all the tax breaks and loopholes they have, they only pay 8%. That's what his study shows. This is insane. And it used to be they contributed 40% of all tax receipts. Now it's around 5% of all tax receipts.
Well, explain this to me, Andy. How is it that Americans can be connived into believing, for instance, you know, like the second tier talker Neil Bortz blathers on and on about the fair tax and the flat tax and yada yada yada. How can Americans be bamboozled into thinking that paying less tax generates more revenue? Because they're still talking that crap to this day. Less tax means more revenue. I mean, that violates everything that I learned starting with 1 plus 1 equals 2.
Well, what they're trying to convince you of is they're going to get rid of the loopholes. And they're going to make that trade-off where they get rid of some of the loopholes and some of the write-offs that they have, which save them on taxes, and they'll lower the rate and hopefully without the loopholes and without the...
But even without the flat tax stuff, the Eric Cantors and the Boners and those guys are out there even now saying that, well, you know, if we can just cut taxes some more, we'll generate more tax revenues. And they're not even talking about flat tax. That's just... antediluvian non-math, you know, that's 1 plus 1 equals 50, that's 1 minus 1 equals a million.
Well, actually, John F. Kennedy did do that. I think he was the one that knocked down the 91% tax bracket into the 70% range, but the trade-off he made was he got rid of tax loopholes when he did it. So in the net, he figured that they would get more tax revenues out of doing that because some of the loopholes would go. That's the idea. But when the Republicans say they're going to do it, I don't think they have any druthers or any thought about actually closing the loopholes. They'll just make more and stopping the different tax write-offs that people get. Anyway, there's another thing, too. I saw an article in the New York Times a while back. I don't know if you caught that. It was on the front page, Lenders Step Away from Environmental Risks by Tom Zeller.
Yeah, I did see that.
And yeah, you maybe talked about it, but I maybe didn't catch the program. No, you saw that. That's good. You know, I talked about West Virginia and some of the efforts there by the Sierra Club and the Rainbow something.
Oh, the Rainforest Action Network. They've done tremendous work, especially where the banks are concerned.
Right, to go after the sources of funding for Mountaintop.
Because all of this is done, and you have a far better grasp of it than I do, Andy, given your background. All of this mountaintop removal, all of these human rights nightmares are accomplished in Appalachia on the margin. It's all betting on the come. It's, you know, that's why the Upper Big Branch disaster was such a little brutal wake-up call for Don Blankenship. Because that mine had practically an output contract on it so that everything was sold the minute it came out of the drift mouth. And the money that funds all this stuff, you know, it's not like they mine the coal, they take it to the market, they sell it, and then they bring the money back home. It's all finance. It's all, it's like a dope deal. You know, it's all done on the front. And the idea being, if you can get these banks to quit participating, then the money to do it with will dry up, and the Don Blankenship will find himself in a very bad place.
Right. Well, there's some principle called matching, where you try to match the duration of your cash flow, how long your operation is continuing to crank out money, with your lending or borrowing that you're going to do. You want to try to match the both so you can pay the bonds. Because usually on big projects, I think like a mine, a company's going to issue bonds. And maybe you'd issue bonds for the length, the duration of the existence of the mine, as long as it keeps on cranking out coal, which may be 30 years or 20 years. So you do a 20 or 30-year bond. And it takes investment banking help to be able to sell those bonds and Wall Street to do that for you and to get the big institutional investors buy big chunks, you know, 20 million, 40 million, 50 million parts of those bond offerings, and they have to line up the investors and they do all that work. But that's what you have to cut off. You got to cut off the investment bankers of raising the debt so they can set up the equipment to start digging those mines and to keep that digging going with that funding. But initially, you know, you don't really need Wall Street very often because those bond deals are usually very large deals and they're set for the long term. But you got to try to nip that in the bud when the bond deals are first done.
Well, I know there's a lot of blue smoke and mirrors involved.
Right.
So.
Well, you stop the institutional investors that are going to buy the bonds on the other end. You have to try to stop them. And they might be large union pension funds too that would be buying those bonds, and you want to try to keep them away from the dirty coal stuff as much as possible, especially state pension. I used to work for a state pension fund, and that's what we would do. We would buy huge chunks of these Wall Street bond offerings, $100 million at a pop. The numbers were mind-boggling because we were working with billions of dollars.
Well, and that's one of the things we found out over time, Andy, is that you've got all of these state pension funds, teachers' retirement systems, university investments, and what we need is a massive divestiture campaign, because what happens if that crap gets sold off?
Absolutely.
What happens if it becomes, if its worth is significantly diminished over a short period of time?
Right. If it becomes toxic and nobody wants it, the price of the bond goes down. That means the yield has to go up. And when that yield, that interest on the bond goes up, that means in order for them to issue new bonds to cover that, they're going to have to pay an enormous amount of interest, and the coupon is going to be much larger than it normally would if there's no interest. Because to entice people, you have to have a large coupon. That means that's their cost of funds. So, of course, if you can kill the demand, you're going to force them to have to offer higher interest rates to pay out on their coupons, and it might be unviable to do that because the cash flow from the mine or the project isn't big enough, so you put them out of business.
I love the thought of it.
No demand.
Andy, good to hear from you. I'm going to try to catch one more phone call before you get out of here.
Yeah, good, do that. I was going to say, I've got my say in. Hey, thanks a lot.
Oh, my pleasure. You have a great evening.
And once I start working, man, I'll help you out.
All right, thanks. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Andy calling from California, formerly of New Jersey. And we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Are you going to go overtime for me or not?
Nah, I can't go overtime anymore.
Oh, you can't go overtime anymore.
Okay. No, I gotta knock off a little bit before 9 so we can get Rick Smith started.
Oh, okay. And what is I wanted to ask you, Bob, first of all, talking about it, there's so many things I wanted with the last two callers to speak about labor. I got the Manchester Union hater today there on Labor Day just to see what they spoke about labor. They had nothing to say about workers or labor. They're all about their GOP candidates and the Tea Party, and a piece by Jonah Goldberg that I don't want to get into.
Oh, jeez.
You look at that guy's face, makes me, it looks like a human zit. You know, the one thing they had was a Labor Day cartoon where, you know, the past Labor Day, it shows a typical guy there with a little bit of a belly there, a gut there, with a Labor Day cookout with burgers on a plate there and his big spatula and the chef's apron on. Then that's the past. And they mean the past George W. Bush passed before January 20th.
Oh, the good old days, yeah.
Yeah. And then the president says, we'll work for food. He has a sign. He looks like he's got his shorts on, but he's got a cup with pencils in it. It looks like he's probably more of an office worker than a manual laborer. He uses the muscle between his ears. But the fact is, Barack Obama, that stimulus package, they try to make this guy out to be a do-nothing president, but it has saved 5 to 7 million jobs or more, Bob. Not just government and local government jobs there, but many private sector jobs there, contractors and all that, road development and all the other infrastructure work that was done. It saved this country from a full-blown depression. I agree with Paul Krugman there. He's a 2009 Economics Nobel Prize winner there, that they need to go even more in the FDR direction. Obama does too. But the fact is, this president has hardly been a do-nothing presidency. And the fact that, and I also got the Boston Globe there, that the fact is that they covered a much more about what the average suffering human being and working class person goes through in the daily life. They're still too corporate friendly for me, the Boston Globe. They've been bought up by the same people that own the former gray lady, the New York Times now. But the fact that they talk about the a la carte menu at the annual Labor Day Union breakfast there, and, the other fact I wanted to get into was Mott's, the Mott's people of Mott's Union. I'm not going to touch anything with from Dr. Pepper or any of that stuff too. I was looking right at it. I was salivating the other day at the supermarket diet Dr. Pepper soda, but I would not touch it. The fact is, those Mott's workers there in that part of New York State there, it doesn't matter. There's supposed to be a meritocracy according to these corporate types, right? The free market meritocracy, the libertarians. The fact is their workers have brought in hundreds of millions of record profits every quarter for Mott's for the Mott's Apple Company and that whole corporation. And yet they're trying to say, well, the other workers in your area only make $14 per hour, so you're making $20 or $21 an hour there, and so you got to make the same as them. Where's the meritocracy in that? If the fact is that they're far more productive, then why aren't they allowed to get their better pay? Instead, no, these damn management types and the rest of them want to steal as much as they can. That gets as much right back to the Social Security. The fact is that is not what your last caller, Andy, was getting into there, Bob. That's the corporate media tries to lump in Social Security with Medicare and Medicaid, which those programs, because of people, as they get older, they're less productive. They need health care, though. We are getting to be an older country. But Social Security by its own, left alone, without the George W. Bush thieves of this world stealing its annual surplus amounts, is a very productive, very efficient program there, that it wouldn't have been any problem for its future if the Republican presidents, namely, had not stolen more than $4 trillion from the annual surplus amounts over the years. The American workers are paying in fine. We have the most productive workers on earth, and maybe that also means that we're too much lapdogs to these corporate bastards like the Koch brothers. And also, I'm sure you got into this too. So, online news piece website that covers it far better even than the Boston Globe with labor topics. There are three great stories there at truthout.org by Jim Hightower, by David Bacon, the face of labor in the streets. There talk about hotel workers striking in San Francisco, and Toronto, Chicago, Honolulu, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Monterey, and cooks, laundry workers, housemen. just people of all walks of life in there. Nobody from management, I guess. But the fact is that they're very much the workers, the unions, as much as they're tried to make them into Marxists, like in Barry Goldwater's 1962 Why Not Victory book there. He tried to make our America's workers, who fought in every one of America's wars, that were took higher casualties, I'm sure, at Omaha Beach, et cetera, in World War II. The fact is, without the union, they are not Marxist organizations. They were never agents of Stalin, or the way that Goldwater, he was more nuttier in those days, was trying to impugn them with such a charge. The right wing today, the Tea Partiers, are the same way. The lying corporatist bastards, the original Boston Tea Partiers, hated corporations as it did our founding fathers. But also, the fact is, without the union movement of the 1930s and before and after, Americans, we would not have the basically the middle class that we have now, which we're losing, which we're fast losing at this very day. Without the union membership and the union labor movement, you would not have a middle class at all in America today. We need to remember that most of all.
That is the simple truth. Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Brian, you have a good night. Okay. Thanks.
You
Thanks
too.
A lot.
Happy Labor Day.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Nothing but truth coming from Brian there. Absolute truth. No labor, no middle class. Wasn't much of middle class before the rise of labor. A lot of rich, a lot of dirt, a little rich, a lot of dirt poor. Try explaining that to a teabagger. But I know that it's worth trying. It is simply worth trying. So it's time to knock off. And I hope you will stick around for Rick Smith here in a couple of minutes, okay? Can you do that, please? Needs all the moral support he can get. And I think if you've never heard Rick before, you will be amazed. He's that good. So cross your fingers and hope all the internets do what the internets are supposed to do, and the series of tubes that's not a big truck. Well, it we need it all. And we are looking for that thrifty 250. Sign up for a $10 a month subscription. Remember, that's less than 5 cents an hour for John Fox, for me, for, you know, not that anybody's getting paid. But this program's got to be worth less than 5 cents an hour. It's just got to be. The whole network's got to be worth that. So bear that in mind. Break a leg, Rick Smith. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Webmaster, web designer, and generally technical advisor on things audio and things internet. Thanks to Ben Birch. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne. Thanks to Reverbo. I'm still giggling at part one of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy. More will be forthcoming. Thanks to David in Tennessee, my head writer. Thanks to the hardworking, brave people at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Also, appalacharising.org. Check it out. It's coming your way. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.